Welcome to episode one of the Threes Company podcast, the leadership podcast that looks at three different perspectives each time. We'll always interview one administrator, one educator, and one coach and answer different questions on leadership and how to develop it within our organizations. I'm Mike Rowe, the host of this podcast. We're about to get started. Let's go.
Welcome back to Threes Company podcast. We're with our next guest here, good friend of mine, Slade Singleton, all the way in the North Carolina area there, coming to us. It's the beauty of these podcasts and being able to do them wherever. Slade and I have been good friends for a long time and business partners and worked together and published two books. And, you know, now I'm in a different realm and he's still getting after it in the football world. So proud of this guy, but we're glad to have you on here, Slade. So why don't you just kind of give everybody a little rundown about yourself?
I appreciate you having me, first off. I'm glad to be a part and get to share what knowledge I've learned from coaches across the country and just, you know, the great game that we have and get to mentor these kids every year. But a little bit about myself. This will be my 10th year coaching high school football. I've called plays as an offensive coordinator for 8 of those years. So I enjoy it. Also was able to start the More with Four system, which is an offensive system for coaches. And our motto is it's a system, you know, for high school coaches, built by high school coaches. So what we do is we just try to, you know, help people along the way that's trying to get programs started or just needing a little extra into what they do. So, you know, we're here to help in any way we can. You know, just throwing this out here, if anybody would like to contact us, you know, my email is slade248@gmail.com. You know, please reach out if you have any questions.
Shameless plug, man. Go check it out. It's a good product there that you do and all that. And you and I, you know, we have a interesting friendship because we've never met face to face. We will here in Knoxville coming up here next year. But we have been Twitter friends for a long time and we talk on the phone every week and just a interesting dynamic. So how modern, I guess, different relationships, but you know, we're glad we have you on here today. And I kind of want to just get you rolling here with, is there like a person, you know, that's kind of impacted you as a leader?
Yeah, well, there's been a couple. I don't narrow it down to just one. You know, my dad definitely, you know, growing up and the way he raised me and my brother and you know, he's always been a role model to us and, you know, he just taught us to do things the right way. You know, coaching wise and things like that, you know, I was fortunate enough to coach under a great man, Travis Nolan, who is now at Oconee County High School in Georgia. You know, great man, and he's always done it the right way. So when I do things, I try to, you know, I always say, well, what would Travis do? You know, so I'd always look back on the things that he taught me as a young coach. And, you know, I still stick to those today. And then, obviously, you know, becoming great friends with you and the way you've built programs and the way you do things, you know, I definitely look up to you as well.
Well, we appreciate that. Is there a particular kind of trait or reason why some of those mentors speak to you and why they, you know, that you're kind of driven towards them?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is just, you know, I'm a straightforward kind of guy, so I don't, you know, what you see from me is what you get. I'm up front. I don't try to sugarcoat things and I don't lie to people. So, you know, all those guys, including yourself, you know, you upfront people, always done it the right way and, you know, don't bend things or break the rules to get things done. You know, you stick to the process and things like that. And that's what, you know, the guys I mentioned, my dad, you and Travis, you know, they've always just done it the right way. So just looking up to you guys and people like that, you know, to me, that's what sticks out.
Well, that's good stuff there. I know you and I, we've talked about this one frequently over the phone, but what's a mistake that you kind of witnessed throughout your coaching career that leaders make maybe more frequently than others?
Yeah, well, I mean, going back to myself, just looking at myself, as I was a younger coach, I was very impatient. I think a lot of times your younger coaches they're looking for the success right off the bat. You know, everybody's looking for, not even in coaching, I mean, even in just in the world today, everybody's looking for a title. You know, they want to have that title. You know, you want to be an offensive coordinator, a defensive coordinator, you know, a manager, if you're talking about business. You know, I think a lot of it is just people, you know, that they're just looking for a title. And when I was younger, I was kind of impatient, you know, with my players a little bit. I kind of wanted the success quickly, you know, and I couldn't figure out why we wasn't getting it, you know, but it was a little bit of me just being impatient. So I've kind of gained patience over the years and, you know, kind of adjusted the way I coach and do things.
Yeah, no, and I totally get that nowadays. It's like, you know, you can look at whatever, you know, use Twitter, for instance, on social media, and everyone's got to have a title with their place where, you know, it's, if you don't have that title, then that's what drives your self-worth. So it's always interesting to see how that plays off, but that is a really good answer to that. And I think I can attest to that as a young coach. I kind of went through the same thing. You know, you want instant results, but really you kind of got to develop a process and be able to kind of push that. And it doesn't matter whatever leadership role you're in. If you take your time and are patient, good things will come. So yeah, I really like that answer. How has social media impacted you personally? I know you've done a lot on there. So just kind of give us a rundown of how that's helped you out in your career.
Yeah, I mean, social media now, I mean, you know, you can reach so many people. You know, again, I have it more through the coaching world than anything else. I mean, you know, I've been able to, you know, I've met you. You know, we're miles away from each other, but we've been able to connect and do some things. And I just use that social media to connect with people across the country. You know, and that, again, going back to the system, you know, we built that system to be able to connect with coaches that we just don't live 2 hours away from. You know, social media, you can reach so many people and do so many things. I mean, every day if you're on Twitter, I mean, it's a coaching clinic every day. There's something going on, you know, coaches asking questions where before you had to drive to a Glazer clinic, a Nike clinic, you know, go to college clinics, which people still do. But you're able to ask questions and get answers daily just through social media. So I think the biggest thing now is it's just a lot different. I mean, you're able to connect with a lot more people.
Yeah. Do you feel that people are more willing to share?
I do. I mean, there's still some out there that we know that they they still hold all the secrets, I guess, and they don't want to give them away. But for the most part, I think the majority of the people that I deal with on a daily basis are willing to share.
Why don't you tell me about a characteristic that you think that every leader should possess?
I believe that you need to be a good listener. I think you have to be a good listener to be a good leader. You know, if you don't listen to what people need or want or things, you know, like that, you might not always agree. But I do believe that you need to be able to listen to what people are asking to be a leader. You know, there's different types of leaders. You lead in different ways. But I believe you still need to be able to listen to become a great leader.
Yeah, and I know, like, when we're I just feel like sometimes being vulnerable, that's hard for people to do. But sometimes just, you know, being a great listener is probably priority number one, but also being able to put yourself out there and not really care what the critics say.
Right.
You know what I mean? Sometimes that puts you in a place there. Definitely. How do you go about developing the great relationships that you've had with coaches all over the country?
Well, you know, the first thing is, you know, you be honest. with coaches. You know, I've been able to connect with a lot of coaches, and you know, a lot, I get a lot of questions daily. I mean, my inboxes are full, either it's email or it's, you know, DMs on Twitter. But, you know, coaches contact you or through whichever, you know, they choose, but they're asking, they're wanting answers. So I think the biggest thing is to connect is you always be honest, and you be upfront with them. You know, I don't try to lie to people or anything like that. So I'm always honest with them. You know, and just the willingness to share. I think that helps connect with coaches. Once you show that you're willing to share, it opens up a whole different door. Because I'm not trying to hide anything, obviously, because I put it out on Twitter. It's on social media, and I answer questions, you know, off that stuff. So I think, you know, like I said, being upfront, being honest, and the willingness to share, I think it is my biggest, you know, upside to that.
Yeah, you're a kind-hearted person too. So I think that kind of people like that about you too. So I feel that that happens. And I know the coaches out there, this is coming from the coaches kind of inbox for me, a question they wanted me to ask you. So how do you go about gaining commitment from your players in the off season, during the season? How do you go about those things?
Yeah, well, I mean, the biggest thing, again, goes back to, again, kids are smart, and kids know who cares about them, and they can figure that out pretty quick. So, you know, you can coach them, and you're going to coach them hard, but you have to love on them. You have to show them that you care. So some of the things I do, you know, is, I will take them position group, you know, whoever I coach. And as an offensive coordinator, I've done it as a whole offense. You know, I'll take them out. We'll either order pizza or we'll do something together, you know, and just try to do things that you know, keep us all together and things like that. So they understand that we care about them. So once a kid knows you care about him, he opens up to you. You know, I treat them just like they're mine. You know, I have three kids myself. I don't treat those kids any different. So, and they know that up front. So, again, I'm just honest with them. You know, I try to help them out any way I can. I give my phone number. You know, I tell them text or call if you ever have any issues or you need a ride or you're somewhere where you shouldn't be and you need to get out of that situation, you can call me at any time. You know, I tell that to all my players. So I basically just let them know that, you know, if you're part of this team, you're part of this family, you're like one of mine. So I treat them like they live in my household, and I treat them the way my kids would want to be treated, or I'd want somebody to treat my kids. So that's how I treat my players.
And you treat them like men, and, you know, then they respect that a lot, and then they kind of follow you that way when you treat everybody right. In those ways. So, yeah, I know, you know, I know if I was playing for you, I'd be running through walls for you. So
I appreciate that.
Coach, we appreciate you being on the podcast here today and talking and just sharing some of your philosophies with us. We really appreciate that. Give them your email one more time for them to reach out to you.
Yeah. Again, I appreciate you having me on. I always enjoy talking to you. You know that, and sharing things with you. My email is Slade 248 @gmail.com.
And if you're a coach out there, you reach out to my boy. He will he'll take good care of you. He's a plethora of football knowledge. And, you know, if he doesn't know it, he's going to find someone who does, and he'll help you out. So, again, Slade, I appreciate you being on here today and taking the time to speak with us. And, you know, hopefully we'll have you back on here again sometime.
Yes, sir. I appreciate it. And anytime you want to listen to me ramble on, you know, I'll be happy to get on here. And I just want to say I appreciate you. And appreciate all the coaches out there for what they do for young men, and God bless all of you.
We have Greg Spanier joining us on the Threes Company chat. Greg is a fourth grade teacher at Ricourie, Cold Spring Elementary, Ricourie School District, and we're excited to have him here. He's someone that I've known for
a long time, 10 years now. And so I'm excited to have him here and see how he responds to the questions at hand. Greg, how are you doing today?
Hey, very good. Great to be here. And I'm honored to have you still thinking about me, Mr. Rowe. Appreciate this.
Oh, yeah. You know, I feel like I've had the opportunity to meet a lot of very good people in the world of education. And I just want to have a way to kind of share everybody with different audiences out there. So, you know, I'm excited to see how you answer these questions today, because everyone kind of has a different take on everything. So I want to just start tonight off here by saying, just tell me a little bit about yourself and tell everybody out there what I know, but you kind of introduce yourself that way.
Yeah, thanks. I'm, like you said, I'm a fourth grade teacher. I have two kids myself. One is almost done with their first year of college, and the other is 14, and sports and activities have been a huge part of their lives. So that also means that it's been a huge part of my life. You know, like, we've been very involved with sports year round, and I've been coaching year round, and it's just such a fun stage in our lives.
Yeah, it's always busy. Those seems the kids just keep growing faster, because I remember both your kids as they were in elementary school, and now, you know, you got one in college and one that's going to be in the high school and all that stuff. So it gets to go real crazy fast here.
Yeah, and every stage gets better, I tell you. I've just really enjoyed every part of their lives, and just the maturity and growing with them as we go. It's been really fun. So do that too, Mr. Rowe.
Yeah, I'm getting there. Yeah, slowly and surely we're getting there. So yeah, in this household anyway. Yeah. So yeah. Well, I want to ask you the first question here that I have for you, and it's just talking about a person who's made an impact on you that was a leader. You know, it could have been someone that mentored you, or somebody outside of, you know, the world of education that maybe impacted your life. So who would that person be, and tell us a little bit about that?
It was really hard to narrow it down to one. I had a few really good influences as far as like coaches and favorite teachers. But lately in my life, in this, you know, in the educational world, this last stage for me, not last, but my most recent stage, it's been fun in education through Sparby. Jerry Sparby was my first principal, and he was just, he had so much energy and passion for everything in life. And, he was great about just listening to me and believing in me and helping me find my passions as well. He's the one that got me going on, you know, technology, and that was through Hyper Studio, if you can believe that, way back then.
Yeah.
And he also turned me on to like this outdoor world of like, you know, gardening and, you know, just nature and the natural world for kids as well. So, and I've been gardening for over 20 years with kids as well.
Yeah, and you've done a lot of awesome things. You know, you do a lot with technology and those kind of things. And then you're obviously your community garden that you've ran, and that program you've done a long time, probably since I've known you. And, you know, you just get a lot of those kids coming in the summer that are passionate, and you're able to share those things with them. So those are some really cool things that you do with kids. But yeah, Jerry is he's a good guy. Anyone that's had the opportunity to meet him knows that, you know, and he's doing some extra great things here, and we hope we can probably have him on here sometime too to talk about some of this stuff. What's a characteristic that, oh yeah, for sure he would be. What's one characteristic that you believe every leader should possess, and why?
I think just caring, and just showing that you care and show your kindness. You'll get people to work with you, and you know, there's things can go a long ways if you just yourself and just show that you're kind and caring.
Yeah, for sure. It just really makes those little things happen. What do you think is a mistake that you maybe witness leaders making more frequently than other people?
I think of the coaching world right away in this factor. And I think that there's this perceived power that people get from yelling, or kind of, I look at it as bullying, really. Getting kids to do what they want and not that they're really buying into it. So I think that we have a great opportunity as coaches and leaders. But I think this perceived power and you know, whistleblowing or really yelling at kids is just it's a missed opportunity, really.
Yeah, you know, you'd like to see them try and do some different things with building relationships, but there are a lot in that coaching world that they feel the louder they are, the more that's going to make them work hard, where that's not really the case when you see, you know, kind of how kids are nowadays, for sure.
Right. Exactly.
But yeah, you see a lot of that in the, you know, it kind of works too in all worlds, you know, you hear about it all the time, but you know, you're lucky if, in your profession, if you're working with the right people and they're not doing that, like your bosses, at least, because that would make for obviously a little more difficult working situation,
right,
as well.
Right. We have to ask ourselves, you know, what if this was our real world? You know, what if someone is yelling at me like this, you know, or making me sit somewhere else in the lunchroom because of the way I talked or the way I acted, you know, singling people out, or, you know, some of these things just don't make sense in our lives. Why are we making kids do this? You know, why are we making them run extra, you know, or, you know, it's all this power thing that I don't think people really fully understand it.
No. And I think when they do understand it and they do it the right way, they kind of maximize the opportunity out of every individual that they kind of work with. But you're right. We put kids in situations a lot that ourselves as adults, we would be crying, and you know, we'd just be crying on top of the mountain about this, like, why are they doing this? This would never fly if I wasn't allowed to sit with my friend in the staff lunchroom. You know what I mean? Yeah. But at school you can't do that. Yeah, it's always funny how that always works out. Yeah, for sure. Explain to me the impact that social networking has made on you personally, in your education, professional kind of lifestyle.
Well, you've already alluded to my age a little bit, but I come from the era where we didn't have, you know, accessibility as much. And I tell you what, it almost feels like there's so much available. There's so much that I can gain. There's so much that I can, you know, be inspired by, or the ideas that are out there, that it's unbelievable to me, because I haven't always had this access. So I look at it as like, I can ask for something and I will get it, or it's just available. I have to find the right avenue. So it's opened up my world. Social networking has opened up so many ideas, and I've really been inspired by it.
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, it's always been, I think Twitter's always been the biggest game changer for me, kind of growing and moving forward. But there's so many other ways out there to communicate, like, you know,
Voxer.
You've got me on the Voxer. Yeah, you had me on Voxer since the beginning, and we always walkie-talkie that way. I look at, you know, how we're doing this today. You know, we're not in the same building or room even like you had to back in the day, and now you're able to talk and share ideas. So just a lot out there, and it's just maximizing what fits you and then using it the right way.
Right. And you speak of Twitter. I just found out that I've been on it for 7 years, and that to me is unbelievable. But that's changed too in how I access it, and how you know we can use it in different ways. It's been really a great tool. But thanks again for introducing me to this podcast as well. I love this idea.
It's a good way. I think you could definitely find ways to tie it in with your kids too. You know what I mean? It's right. Pretty simple stuff that way. Is there a particular area on Twitter that, you know, or a different social platform that has kind of really inspired you and energized you as a classroom teacher?
I think just continually updating who I follow, or who, you know, who I surround myself with, really there. You know, what I've been reading, or, you know, we had Mr. Adam Welcome, and just hearing different perspectives of life in life. And you know, I started out with probably more sports and more of, you know, just current events, but now it's become more of I want to be inspired. I want to learn more. So.
Yeah, it's always great that way. And we talked a little bit about this one before we got rolling, but developing great relationships, what are some things that you do to develop those with your students?
There too, I think just leading by example, or just letting them know I care. I remember thinking as a student, you know, oh, does this guy like me? does this teacher like me? You know, you worry about these things as students. So, you know, that's what we just need to keep emphasizing that to our kids. You know, we got to tell them you love them, or just let them know in some way or form that we love them. When we have their best interest in mind. So I think just being kind to them and, you know, not coming down on them when they make a mistake, or, you know, doing it the right way at least.
Oh yeah, for sure. I think when you talk about making mistakes, you know, everyone's allowed to. We, you know, we're able to as adults, you know, do those things, and we can recover, and we got to let kids fail a little bit just to learn from it. And then they can kind of develop, you know, find a more successful way to solve a problem too. We seem to always want to coddle everyone and not let them fail at all.
Exactly.
I think really it's a disservice for kids too.
Yeah, we learn from our mistakes. You're right. Exactly.
All the time. How do you gain commitment from your students in your classroom?
There again, just listening early, caring. We do a lot of team building things early in the class year. There's so much that you can set up with team building and, you know, through play. We can, in fourth grade, we do a lot of games. We do a lot of, you know, building of that trust and community early, and it pays off. I tell you what, I got a great group of students this year, and I just love having them around, and I love being with them, and it makes me sad that it's already April, you know, end of April, and I just want to keep growing with them, and they buy in because, you know, they know that they're part of something that is part of a community and part of being together and trying to help other people succeed. So I think I gain commitment just through, you know, letting them know that we can have fun together and we can play and we can make mistakes.
No, that's good. You know, I know some things that you do. Can you tell our audience a little bit about maybe a couple of team building activities that you do to kind of start off maybe the school year or in the middle of the year? How do you develop that play?
Right. I didn't always have the sequence down of the games. Like I had some things in the wrong order early, but it does matter. Like they don't start out trusting, you know, it takes a while and you can gauge your class, but start out with some things that they're comfortable with. And then the big thing actually in these games you do, like I should mention a few games. Like we do a lot of like named games or family games, or we think it's really important to know each other really well and just understanding their, you know, families and their, you know, what makes them function, what's their world like outside of school. But there is a certain order to these things you do. You know, you can't start with the personal space things, or, you know, you do have to work up to a comfort level. So those are some of the mistakes I made early in my career with team building. But just have fun and then really have conversations about the games after, because that's how you grow, I think, too. We make mistakes in the games we play as well, but to yell at them and stop the game doesn't help them. We just have to learn from it and talk about it as a group then after.
Yeah, give them some of that reflection time to do that stuff.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. I know you have a small team of fourth grade teachers that you work with, but how do you gain commitment from them, like with your coworkers, in developing kind of that trust as your cohesive fourth grade team at Cold Spring Elementary?
That's a good question. This team came together really well. I have to say, this is the best group of teachers I've ever worked with. I'm very fortunate. Our fourth grade or fifth grade teachers is just amazing. So I'm not positive how it came together, but man, I'm really, really fortunate. We have a comfort level that seems to work really well. Like I said, I really enjoy them.
Yeah, they're a good group of people, and that makes the job and showing up easier when you know you can work and trust everybody that you got there. Tell everybody for Twitter purposes your Twitter handle so they can follow you if that interests them.
I'm at Spanier Chuck, S-P-A-N-I-E-R-C-H-U-C-K.
Perfect. Yeah, right. No way. Yeah, I think that is too.
If to not,
they can
no
message me. Yeah, they can. They'll get me. They'll. They can drop messages and all that. So if something doesn't work out, we can get them the correct information. Well, we appreciate you being on here today and talking a little about. You do a lot of great things, and I know you're great with kids, and very honored to have you here, and just being able to share, you know, just a little bit about what you do for our kids. And I hope you know you're doing just a great job there every single day for those kids.
I thank you very much. I really appreciate the opportunity here, and I can't wait to see how this progresses for you, Mike. And I really miss you at Cold Spring, and I know you've gone on to great things, and I always appreciate the work you do and what you've done. So you did a lot for my family and the kids at CSC. So thank you, and appreciate your time.
Greg Spanier, fourth grade teacher at Cold Spring Elementary. With me here today is Jerry Ness, superintendent, retiring superintendent from Fergus Falls, who has been a really good mentor for me and a very strong leader and helped me in my transition. And I'm very lucky to have him here today on the Three's Company podcast. And so, Jerry, why don't you just kind of fill everyone in on your leadership roles that you have done and a little bit and tell everybody a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Thank you. Thanks for the invite. Well, Mike, I started out teaching in a long-term sub in Aiken, Minnesota. So that was my first year of my 40-year career here as I wind up here in June. And so then I jumped to Herman, taught for 10 years there in business education. I didn't think I was going to have a job much longer in Herman because I thought small class sizes, how long are they going to be around? So I jumped into the world of administration, and that's kind of really lit my fire for leadership. Had great professors at the Tri-College up in Fargo-Moorhead area, and was able to get a job right away at Kenosha, Wisconsin, and I was at a middle school assistant principal, but I longed for back to Western Minnesota, came right back, and I was at a multiple roles at West Central area. So right away it was Hoffman Kensington, and I was a 712 principal there. Then I went to the middle school principal for a couple of years when we joined up with Elbow Lake, Wendell, and Barrett. Then I became the secondary school principal, and then the last 5 years there out of my 15 years and at West Central, I was the superintendent. I moved to Fergus in the fall of 2006. I've been here ever since, so it's wrapping up my 13th year. So if you add all those up, 11 teaching, 11 as a principal, and 18 now as a superintendent. So I am winding up my 40-year career.
It's an amazing career, and I love hearing all those different things because you've really worked on building up all those skills, and each one has kind of taught you something, and I know you've been able to share those with me. My first question for you is, can you name a person who's been a tremendous impact on you as a leader?
You know, yes, I can. And, you know, in one, I'll finish up the other part. I forgot about, I was the MREA executive director. So Minnesota Rural Education Association's executive director, half-time and then half-time soup. And that kind of really, I guess, got me known around the state because I was traveling the state doing presentations and different things. But as I look back going into education early on, I was attracted to my business education teacher, Eugene Henney in Argyle, Minnesota, and also Coach Warren Keller, who's in the Hall of Fame. I was lucky enough when he went into the Basketball Hall of Fame, he chose me to induct him. And so I gave an induction speech there. And the thing about the impact as a leader is they were hard-nosed, Eugene Henney had a lot of fun with teaching. He taught accounting, which I loved. And so he had fun in the classroom and made learning just special. And then Warren Keller was hard-nosed and demanded a lot out of you. And later in life, we became great friends. And so those are early on getting me into education. And then as I became principal, I had a friend who was also a principal at Elbow Lake. Dennis Anderson was his name, and he was just a bit older than me. And just very wise, and we would talk for almost an hour a day about developing the new West Central area school district, and just really shaped my thinking on, you know, high standards, you know, doing good things, treating people right, but and being fair, and kind of basically everyone gets a consequence for their behavior. If you get good behavior, you get compliments, you get recognized for good things, and if you're not quite doing what you're supposed to be doing, you get a consequence for that too. So I've had a few great mentors. I could name more, to be honest, but I'll leave it short. Those are some key people in my life.
Yeah, and that's kind of why I'm doing this whole podcast thing, is I've met so many great leaders in different aspects. I want to be able to share them kind of with the world, because everyone's stolen parts from everybody. So yeah, I totally get that. You could probably list 50 people that, you know, were impacts.
Interesting one right now. Our whole principal group is working with Dr. Joe Hill of Giant Worldwide. And he's really I knew some of the things about, why I believe this way and how I behave this way, but he's giving us some language and some vocabulary to work with our team. And so that's kind of a new mentor right now, and just kind of defining and putting our processes in order here as I leave the district. And Superintendent Jeff Drake from Battle Lake comes into the position. We have really expanded our skills and know each other that much better. So it's kind of like hopefully a model of continue to learn to the last day. That's certainly what we're trying to do is here in Fergus Falls as I'm exiting.
Yeah, it never stops. You know what I mean? I know in your positions, you've had opportunities to hire people for leadership positions. Is there a particular characteristic that stands out to you that you think a leader as a school administrator should possess?
You know, this has probably changed over the last few years for me. The one thing I think, the one word, which is probably one you won't hear from a lot of people, and maybe you will, being vulnerable. And the reason I say that is I think people will follow a leader that is able to share and sort of bare their soul a bit, and their pain, agony, triumphs, everything in between. So I've learned through some tragedies in my own life about sharing my life with our district. And specifically my principals and also our staff. I do a lot of writing that way and just connecting with them, but just really being open and honest about things that are going well and things that are not going so well. But so being vulnerable, I think, is one of the key things. And that kind of, you can do that whether you're, I'm an extrovert, or if you're an introvert, or, you can find your way to be that. So it kind of fits everyone. And I just think I've had staff tell me enough. It's like you're more approachable. You're more, I don't know if human is the right word, but you're definitely connecting with them when you're vulnerable.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think I'm learning that as in my quick short tenure here as a superintendent, that is kind of an important thing. And I think people need to be able to be vulnerable more and more in the leadership role. You can't be that hard stone anymore. You've got to be willing to, show some emotion and do those things. So yeah, I agree with you there. Have you seen any or witnessed any mistakes that, leaders have made? They could be frequent ones that maybe you've seen in your tenure, or you just know that, hey, you shouldn't do these things if you're going to be put in a leadership position.
You know, leaders make mistakes all the time. And the mistake part of it is if you don't admit you made a mistake, apologize, work to be better, and go a different path. So I think what happens is a decision is made to go a certain path, and halfway through, everybody knows it's the wrong path. And just have the guts to say, hey, folks, daggone it, let's start over on this. Let's try something different. And I think being so inflexible and, you know, not being able to just kind of, boy, we just really didn't, that just didn't work. Why don't we circle back and let's try something different. And to me, I think what happens, I can trace it to my work, is if I don't involve others in the decision, that's typically when I have to circle back more. Oh, we better talk to this group or that group and get this right. So I think just not involving enough people and getting those opinions and voices heard. But then, you know, if there is something not going so well, don't be afraid to change paths, and people will appreciate that. They appreciate the words, sorry, you know, the thank you, please, that, you know, just those are big words, very powerful words that leaders probably don't use enough.
No doubt there. I know you kind of touched on it. I find that you're a real strong communicator. You're, you know, in a much bigger school district than I am, but you're able to get information out to your staff. Can you share with everybody just a couple little things that you do to help communicate so that you can get all your stakeholders kind of on the same page?
Yep, certainly. So what I try to do each week is I write a column in our newspaper, and what that does is that, you know, it's certainly tied to the Daily Journal, but that's also on our Facebook account, it's Twitter feed, all of those things. So even though it's a document that you're writing, almost like a blog, and so then that gets out. So that's my community, trying to keep people informed on a community-wide basis. I also have a superintendent weekly e-news, I call it. So I try to keep our staff, so informing them weekly, here's important dates, here's school board meetings, here's things on the agenda, here's things that you can expect. So we're keeping, you know, the internal group. So you communicate externally, communicating internally. And then, you know, superintendents are tied directly to their boards. And so you're looking at a board, you're the CEO, if you will, for that board. So what I try to do then is just be very thorough on what meetings I'm having. Here's things that happen during the week. Here's things that are coming up that we need to be working on. And that's a report that is just written for them. They're not to respond to it. So it's more information. And then at our work sessions, certainly we'll sit down and visit about those things. And then throughout the week, you know, something good happens. I use Twitter a fair amount. I learn from Twitter. I read. I learn, you know, so that's a learning tool for me. And also just getting the word out. So multiple, I think one of the key things right now is the social networking part of it is you can't just use one platform. You know, as an example, our most powerful tool for our district to communicate is Facebook. And so when we have a job opening, we have a school closing, we have anything related, if you get it out on Facebook, it spreads rapidly and far and wide. So we're trying to keep up the speed with how people want to be communicated with. So as an example, for a school closing, we use Remind app that parents can sign up for. We use School Messenger so they can get a call, an email, a text. We use Twitter. We use all the local radio stations, the TV stations, emails, you name it. We're getting the word out. So we've just found that you have to reach people. You have to use their preferred method of communication.
Yeah, and there's so many different ways now. But yeah, we even us, it's still like just put it on Facebook. It's going to get to where it needs to go most of the time. So it's pretty cool to see how that goes. How do you develop great relationships with your other principals in your building, with your teachers? How do you do those things?
Well, I'm a big believer in walking around the building and visiting with people. And I you asking them about their families. You know, we're asking teachers to connect with students, and you're asking them about, well, what happened in the ball game last night, or at work, or whatever they're doing in their life, and to model that. You know, I try to walk around the building each day, so I get to work fairly early. But when kids start arriving 8, 8:10, somewhere in there, I try to do a swing through the building here. So I'm talking to staff. I'm going down, seeing all the middle school kids down in the cafeteria before they head off to their classes. Then I circle up and go into the high school area and talk with some staff. And, you know, my issue is that you get into too much of a routine and you kind of have that same route. I need to change that up and connect with others. But it's really just talking about what's going on, what happened. And, you know, I'm kind of a sports fan, and I also like going to concerts and seeing kids perform, doing things, you know. So you're complimenting, you're connecting. And so all of those things are a way to get relationships.
Yeah. And just to touch on that, I know myself, I find myself guilty. Most of the mornings I drive myself down to the elementary end of the building where I start, because that's always where I was teaching. So I'm probably my most comfort zone. So I always have to like force myself to get to the middle school, high school end of the building a little more with those things and all that.
Yeah. If you're having a bad day, you just go down to the kindergarten, first grade classrooms, and you get hugs and smiles, and you can't help but be happy when you come out of those buildings. Those are a lot of fun. And I was a high school person. So, and I have to travel to get to our three elementary buildings. So again, I've got to get it on my calendar. And so the word intentional comes to mind, in the sense that, you know, you need to get out, you need to make connections, you need to make your rounds, if you will, so people are seeing you. And pretty soon here now, I will be putting out an email to all of our staff and to say, you know, I'd really like to connect with your class. Is there something special coming up, or a lesson I should drop in on? And as I'm winding up, you know, I just want to make sure that students know who I am. I care for them. I want to see what's best for them. And I've always felt that the students should know who you are. It doesn't matter the district, size of your district. I think I see superintendents in the metro area that are doing all kinds of things in classrooms all the time. And others could be in small districts, and they're behind their closed door and working on the business field. So I've always tried to stay in the relationships with everybody and not become a businessman, which the superintendent can really tend to do. You deal with a lot of finance and HR, those things. So you need to get out there and connect, because the kids, you know, they remind you why you're in education every day. So you need to connect with them.
Yeah, that's so true. It just fits in, and you got to put it on the calendar. If you don't, you know, it's probably not going to happen then, because there's a million excuses to not do those things. Hey, we come to our last question of the day, and it's really, how do you get that commitment from your administrators and your teachers at your school there? What are some of the things that you've done that really help get them to buy into what Fergus Falls is all about?
I think we are really clear in what we're expecting, you know. So as an example, professional learning communities, you know, here's what we expect. You know, you're talking about student achievement, you're giving them agendas, you're working through things that are clean, and your expectations are clear and clean is what I should say. And so I think that's the, that's probably the key thing, is we have goals. We're working towards those. They're communicated. Here's how you as an individual can help with the goals. Here's you as a PLC member, a building member. Here's what you're going to do, and here's your role in that, and then support them. So I really believe if you're working to remove barriers from a teacher being successful with their students, you will get a commitment from them. They can see you then working diligently to help them with their goals and with the district. And I think that's probably the big thing, is you're in there getting your hands dirty with everybody else. So it's not that you're the ivory tower, if you will, that you just tell people what to do and come down and look around a little bit, see if they're doing it. But now you're kind of in there with them. You're working on just real common sense, good education practices, and encouraging them as you know, if I went back to, you know, characteristics of leader, one I read somewhere is if I had to do this all over again, I would encourage people and compliment people more. And I think that's probably where you're gaining commitment as well, is you know, just tell them they're doing a good job, and you can slip in, you know, you could probably look at this method and you could improve in this area. But overall, man, you were really working hard and doing good work, and I appreciate it. I could always probably say that more, you know, and being very heartfelt and being truthful. I think our teachers, support staff, working with our kids every single day in the classroom is it's great stuff, and they do great work.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think it's going to be more with the younger generation coming in, getting those small compliments is going to be a big thing to keep them motivated and keep them in the teaching profession too. So, Jerry, I just want to thank you so much for being on here. You know that you've been a big impact on me this year, and I'm glad you were able to take some time to share some of your philosophies with us here today on leadership, and we really appreciate it.
Been great working with you, Mike.
It's always good. Thank you.